Micah. Right. Now, chapter 5, yeah? As far as I'm concerned, is the most difficult chapters in the book. Alright? And I find it difficult to understand some of the things, alright? So I can only share with you what I know. Alright? Now, first of all, we can look at some of the complication in the chapter, yeah? If we read chapter 5, it seems from verse 2 here, it talks about the coming Messiah, the coming Jesus, right? But in actual fact, chapter 5 verse 2 here talks about the one to be ruler in Israel, the one, yeah? There's no mention of who this one is, okay? It's just one. And his ruling shall last from everlasting to everlasting, right? Now, when we read verse 3, here it talks about the continuation of Zion in labor, which is from chapter 4, yeah? So it seems that the labor continue, or if not, then this is an elaboration of the labor in chapter 4 verse 10, right? Chapter 4 verse 10. Okay, after the period of labor has passed, then we find that he, the one who rules in Israel, shall stand and feed his flock. Alright, stand and feed his flock. Okay, what he brings to the flock is peace, right? Which can be seen in verse 5, right? Now, we come to the verse 5 and verse 6. Here it talks about Assyria or the Assyrian and also the land of Nimrod. Right? Now, Assyrians is used here actually, as we know, is to what? To go against Israel. But surprisingly, when you look at verse 7 onwards, the remnant of Jacob became so strong that they could actually terrorize the Gentiles. Right? If you read verse 8. And the remnant of Jacob shall be among the Gentiles in the midst of many people, like a lion among the beasts of the forest. Like a young lion among flocks of sheep. Right? So the remnants are no longer under any oppressions, but instead we find that they were given power even to overcome the Gentiles. Alright? This is where the complication is. Okay, now, when we read on further down, from verse 10 onward, right to verse 15, here it talks about the things that God would like to destroy. Alright? And one of them, as I mentioned before, is what? Horses. The second is city. The third is stronghold. And the fourth is a kind of craft, which is sorcery. And then the people, soothsayers, calf images, sacred pillars, blah 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 blah. Okay? Now, I want you to pay attention to verse 15, yeah? And I will execute vengeance in anger and fury on the nation that have not heard. Okay? In my version it says, on the nation that have not obeyed. Okay? Now, so we find that in chapter 5, there are many things mentioned. It seems that we cannot really trace it back to history, okay? Whereby the remnant of Jacob had become so strong that they could even terrorize their captives or whatever, or even the Gentiles, right? And so, if I'm correct, and here it talks about, chapter 5 talks about the continuation of the labor, right? After they have passed through, okay? Pass through it, then the Lord shall feed them. And from verse 5 onward is the illustration of that period of labor. Is the period of labor, right? And how God would purge them or refine them through the Assyrian Of course, Assyrians must not be taken literally to mean the historical Assyrian. Right? The Assyrian here represents a kind of oppressing forces, okay, that go against the people of God. I think when we did the book of Zephaniah, we have already said that we must not just look at a nation from a physical perspective. Rather, we should look at it from the point of view of its characteristics. Alright? Okay, so in this case, the Assyrians here refers to an oppressing force. Alright, now, so when they come, what happened? The Lord will raise against him 7 shepherds and 8 princely men. Okay, it's like to go against or to resist their oppressing power. Okay, now, so if you look at it from the angle of the church or from a spiritual perspective, right? Now, for God to rule in Zion, then the mountain of God must first be purged, right? Likewise, now what we said yesterday, for God to be our God, then all of us must become what? Overcomers. Right? So the end message of Revelation is also one about what? Overcomers. Do you remember the verse that I told you? Do you remember the verse? Where is it? We turn to 21 here. Yeah, verse 7. Okay. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. Right, so from the very beginning of the book, we know that the 7 churches were told to be overcomers, and even towards the end of the book, right, and we must also become what? Overcomers. And in this way, the Lord shall be our God, and we shall be his children. Okay, now, so in relation to that, when we look at Micah chapter 5, right, Micah chapter 5, so I believe, this Assyrian must be overcome. Now, those who overcome, they could overcome whoever that oppressed them, like from verse 7 and verse 8. Actually, even the Gentiles, right? Gentiles or whatever could not have any influence on them, okay? In fact, these Gentiles are being overcome by the remnants of Jacob, okay? Remnants of Jacob. Okay, now, we come to verse 10 to verse 15. 10 to verse 15. Here I think it talks about specific things that we need to overcome. Now, why is it horses mentioned? Why is it that horses are mentioned here? What do you think? In the Bible, what does a horse represent? What does it represent? What does it represent? I return to Jeremiah. I return to Jeremiah, chapter 8. Jeremiah chapter 8. We read verse 6. Jeremiah chapter 8 verse 6. I listened and heard, but they do not speak aright. No man repented of his wickedness, saying, what have I done? Everyone turned to his own course as the horse rushes into the battle. Okay. Now here it talks about the nature or the characteristic of the horse which rushes into battle. It represents what? A state of mind. A state of mind. Okay? A state of rebellion. Okay? The horse's rushes into battle is a state of rebellion. Okay? So, within the city of God, this is one of the things that God is going to remove. Okay? So, when we read the prophetic books, they always use horses, stuff like that, to represent. Right? And this can also be found, what? In the book of Revelations, yeah, in the book of Revelation, where horses are mentioned as well. Okay, so biblically speaking, it is more inclined to refers to what? A state of mind or a mode of existence, right? Which prevent a person from coming close to God, which prevent a person from becoming an overcomer, right? Now, we come back to Micah, yeah? Micah, chapter 5. Yeah? Now, cities we have already mentioned the other day, and strongholds, and we mentioned, and verse 12, yeah? Cut off sorcery from your hand, and you shall have no soothsayers. Sorcery is what? Like, normally we take it to mean what? Black magic. A sorcery can be also a form of addiction, right? That can take a person's heart away, or that lead a person away from worshipping the true God. It's a form of sorcery, right? So we find that all this have to be removed as well. Now, they come to carved images or sacred pillars, and these are wooden images that points to what? Idolatry, okay? Idolatry. And this has to be removed as well. Right? This has to be removed. So, when you read chapter 5, yeah, we find that Zion is going through a period of labor. This labor is like a purging process. And in the process of cleansing, all these horses, city, blah, 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 are removed as a result. Right? And then we find that what happened? Then this one, the one here shall rule in the midst. Okay? So, from verse 5 to verse 15 is an illustration of 1 to 4. Right? 1 to 4 is like an intro, and 5 to 15 elaborate what that passage is all about. Okay? So, like what I said to you initially, because to me this is the most complicated chapter, right? And that's all I know. Okay. This chapter 5. Yeah? Hi. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
Go on.
Yesterday, when I was looking at verse 6. Okay.
Sorry.
Yesterday, when I was looking at chapter 5, verse 6, when you read it, you shall waste the sword of the land of Assyria and the land of Israel. Okay. My first impression was that this was two different places. Okay. But after looking at the concordance, I found that there was a relationship between Assyria and Nimrod. Yeah, Assyria and Nimrod. In fact, it's not two different places. In fact, what it's saying here is Assyria, as in, for example, like, England, okay, and then Nimrod, land of Nimrod, okay. In fact, Nimrod is a person's name, or the name of the land, okay. So what I'm saying is like England, Anthony's place, okay. But in fact, when you look at it, there, it's actually pinpoints a place. I don't know if you. If we turn to Genesis chapter 10. First Genesis chapter 10, verse 8 to 11. So who was this person called Nimrod? He's actually a descendant of Noah. He was begot by Cush, if you look at verse 8. Cush begot Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one among the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Therefore he said, let Nimrod the mighty hunter before the Lord. If you just read that bit, you probably will not get an idea of what I'm saying. But if you come down to 10 and 11, and the beginning of his kingdom was Babel. First 11. From that land he went to Assyria and built Nineveh. So the connection between Nimrod and Assyria is that the city, Nimrod went to Assyria and he built the city called Nineveh. If you look at the Bible, Nineveh isn't actually dotted around everywhere. It's actually mentioned Nineveh in the book of Jonah and in the book of Nahum. That's in fact the books before Micah and the book after Micah. Actually, when Papa was saying before concerning verse 15, and the execute vengeance and the few nations I have not heard saying obey. That actually connected something else for me. Because in the book of Jonah, it's about God sending Jonah to warn Nineveh, but they obeyed. But then later on we find that this city was the city that became, after being obedient, became a very sinful city again. And then they were punished by God. And that is quoted in the book of Nahum. So, what's the relationship between Nineveh and chapter 5? If we look at the similarities, like for example, if we look at the concerning about the lions and things like that, in verse 8. We turn to Nahum, chapter 2, verse 11 to 13. Where's the dwelling of the lions, and the feeding place of the lions, where the lion walked, the lion next to the lion stood, and no one made them afraid. The lion tore pieces in the for his clothes, killed for his lioness, filled his case with bread, and his dens with flesh. Behold, I am against you, says the Lord of hosts. I will burn your chariots in smoke, and the sword shall devour your own lions. I will cut off your prey from the earth, and the voice of your messenger shall be heard no more. So in fact, maybe like what I said, there's no historical background now. The remnants overcoming their enemies, But I think from Nahum you can see that, maybe it's not the people who are overcome, but it's God who totally destroys them. Then from 10 to 14, there's mentions of Micah, mentions concerning chariots, strongholds, sorceries, and carved images, wooden images, If you look back at Nahum, in fact the city of Nineveh, all these things are connected to these three things. If we look at horses and chariots, we can see that in chapter 2, verse 3 to 4, and chapter 3, 1 to 3, mentions horses and chariots. Chapter 2, verse 3 and 4. The shields of the mighty men are in red, the violent men are in scarlet. The chariots come with flaming torches in the day of the preparation and spears of bandage. The chariots rage in the streets, they jostle one another in their broad roads. They seem like vultures, they run like lightning. Chapter 3, verse 1 to 3. Woe to the bloody city, it is full of lies and robbery. Its victims never depart. Noise of a whip and the noise of rattling wheels. Galloping horses or past clattering chariots. Horsemen charge with bright sword and glittering spear. There's a multitude of slain, a great number of bodies, countless corpses, they stumble over their corpses. In a way, I was thinking that these people are quite cruel. If we look at strongholds, chapter 3, verse 5. All your strongholds are fig trees with ripened dates. The day she can be falling into the mouth of the ether. No idea what that means. Sorceries and soothsayers. Chapter 3, verse 4. Because of the multitudes of holotries in your seductive horror, the mistress of sorceries who sells nations with their holotries and families with her sorceries.
God said one of the wrongdoings of Israel was about holotries, and
Yeah, horology in the sense of that they when you mention horology, it's having multiple partners.
Yeah,
but horology in the sense of God towards His people was that they relied on many different nations apart from God.
Mm-hmm.
So then, if you look at now in chapter 1, verse 14. The Lord has given a promise concerning you. Your name shall be protected. You no longer. Of the house of your God, I will cut off your covering and remove the image and will give your faith when you are back. Okay, so that I think is very self-explanatory. They are idolaters. Yeah. So, like I said, look at Micah chapter 5, verse 15. And I will execute vengeance in anger and fury on nations that have not lived. Or, as we say, okay. So this city actually, in fact, first obeyed, but now they have turned from their ways. So the prophecy of Nahum was that this city shall be destroyed. So I don't know that.
Okay. Right, we move on, yeah? Chapter 6. We go through them briefly first, all right? Now, chapter 6, we can identify there are two problems here, okay? Now, the first problem is from verse 1 to verse 5, and the second problem is from verse 9 to verse 16. Now, in between these two problems, here it records the response of the prophets, yeah? And how that he would come before the Lord, all right? Now, if we read verse 1 to verse 5, now we find that here God is like asking them that to plead their case before the mountain, or let the hill hear their voice. But also at the same time, and God wants the people or the mountain as a symbol to listen to the Lord's complaint, right? It seems that people here have not been nice towards the Lord, in a sense that they always complain against God for not probably taking good care of them. So God would like to contend with Israel, right? Now, so from verse 3 onwards, we see that God actually, through the mouth of Micah, gave many examples, right? Now, here the first one given is in verse 4, I brought you up from the land of Egypt. I redeemed you from the house of bondage, and I send before you Moses, Aaron, and Miriam. All my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, counseled, and what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him. From Achaia goes to Gilgal. Right? Now, here it says, that you may know the righteousness of the Lord. Okay? So one thing we can understand here is that, yeah? The people at the time were weary of God. They were not very happy, and they were not very satisfied with probably what the Lord had done to them or done for them, right? So here God has cited many examples, right? Now, bringing them out of Egypt is an example of God's almighty power. And more importantly, and this example actually reveals what? The mercy and the kindness of God towards them. Okay? Now, so they have forgotten about the history of their forefathers. You know that the mighty deeds of God always pass down from one generation to another. Alright? Now here it also mentioned like things like Balaam, you know, king of Moab, you know, asked Balaam to curse. Okay? And God prevented the death from happening. You know, I think in the book of Deuteronomy, and this incident is re-mentioned, right? It's re-mentioned. It's re-mentioned, and basically, yeah, we read chapter 23 of Deuteronomy. And I think this is a dimension that is not mentioned in Numbers, okay? But it's mentioned in Deuteronomy. We turn to Deuteronomy chapter 23. Deuteronomy chapter 23. We read verse 5. Okay. Nevertheless, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but the Lord your God turned the curse into a blessing for you. Now, the reason is given, yeah? Because the Lord your God loves you. Right? So I think the example of Balaam here is cited basically is to point to the people in the time of Micah to understand that the history that they have read in the past, okay, the mighty deeds that God have shown, basically is to tell them how much God loved them. Right? And that includes the example of Balaam. You get what I'm saying? Okay? So, now, the moral lessons behind this is that, yeah, when we cannot sense the mighty work of God, when we cannot see the love of God anymore, then one thing for certain will happen in our life. And what is that? Complaining. You get what I'm saying? This is always the case. Alright? Now, if a person's heart has been filled, with the love of God, or with thankfulness or thanksgivings to God, then I don't think he will ever complain. He will ever complain. Yeah? Because the love within is so overwhelming, nothing else can come into the heart. But the fact that at times we complain and complain and complain, why? Because we fail to see the righteousness of God. We fail to see what he has done. So this is actually one of the major problems as identified in Micah chapter 6. Alright? Now, we move on to the second problem, yeah? We quickly move on to the second problem. Alright? From verse 9, yeah? From verse 9. Well, strange enough here, here is actually the Lord's voice cries to the city, to the city, a specific city, a particular city, wisdom shall see your name. Okay. Now, here it basically talks about the wicked deeds, yeah, of the people, yeah. Their wickedness, such as short measure, such as wicked balances, such as deceitful weight, you know. And not only that, here it also talks about their character, their behavior. They're full of violence, full of aggressiveness. And not only that, their tongues is deceitful. Right? This few verses basically paint a picture of who these people really were. How they were like, how they behaved towards one another. Alright? Now, so for that reason, God is going to what? Strike them, punish them because of their sin. Okay? Now, one of the punishments that God would execute on them is in verse 15. You shall sow but not reap. You shall tread the olives but not anoint yourself with oil. And make sweet wine but not drink wine. Now, in the Old Testament scriptures, like the prophetic books, yeah, wine, sweet wine, oil represent what? Represent the goodness of God. Yeah? We turn to Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 31. We read verse 12. Verse 12, yeah? Now therefore they shall come and sing in the height of Zion, streaming to the goodness of the Lord. Okay? Here it says, streaming to the goodness of the Lord. Okay, for wheat and new wine and oil, for the young of the flock and the herd, their soul shall be like a well-watered garden, and they shall sorrow no more at all. Right? So wheat and new wine actually give us an indication that it refers to the goodness of God. Now, here it says, streaming to the goodness of the Lord, struck blah 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 blah. You get what I'm saying? So it's a representation of God's goodness. Okay? Now, so those who sin against God, according to Micah chapter 6, right, they shall not taste the sweet wine. Basically, they shall lose the blessing of God. Right? And you know that there's always a covenantal blessing to be given to them. If they have violated the covenant, what happens? Then the condition attached to the covenant will be withdrawn, and the curses shall be upon them. Alright? Now, again, the reasons are given, yeah? So, the reasons are given in verse 16. For the statutes of Omri are kept. All the works of Ahab's house are done. And you walk in their counsel that I may make you a desolation. And your inhabitants a heathen. Therefore you shall bear the reproach of my people. Now, so the reason is given because of the what? The statute of Omri and also the works of Ahab's. Okay, all these evil deeds of these two kings are being seen in the times of Micah as well. Right? Like covetousness, fighting amongst themselves, like fighting position, use of kingship, right? To take over by force, right? And these are the characteristics of Omri and Ahab. And this can also be seen in the time of Micah. Right? So this is one of the major problems as well. So we can see that basically in chapter 6 there are two huge problems identified. One is their inability to recognize the righteousness of God, which is demonstrated in His love for them through His mighty deeds. And that has been ignored, or this has not been seen clearly by the people at the time. Okay. The second thing is what? They practice the statutes of Omri. All the wicked deeds of Ahab's house are seen in their life as well. Alright? Okay, now, you know, I left out verse 6 and verse 8 because I think when you look at this kind of situation, okay, if you think that this also happened in our life today, or in the community of faith, sometimes we may complain as well. Why? Because we cannot really feel the love of God. We cannot really sense that His presence is with us. Sometimes we also see that wrongful deeds which are not very good, are also done in the church. Now, in those situations, what should you do? If you are a worker of God, what would your response be? The first thing that you do, what will you do? Let's say you are RE teachers, yeah? RE teachers, okay? And you see that your student, okay? They don't talk about God, they only complain. Complain all the time, not happy. Every day on computer games. Okay? Or they do things that they shouldn't have done, okay? What will you do? What would your reaction be? What? Beat them up? What? Slap them? No way, man. They will leave the class immediately. What will you do? Okay? The next time you are a board member, that's it, yeah? And you go to a church and you see that the members are not doing too well, you know? And they show all the characteristics of of all the people here, the attributes. What would you do?
I personally would examine myself first.
Very good.
And then see if there's no point of you telling them to do something that you do yourself. So like Jesus said, okay, you remove this from the loving man first, and then remove the steps of the people.
That's why I think that the writer's heartfelt words are mentioned in verse 6 to verse 8, right? Now, here he is talking about himself, right? Now, I think to correct those situations, first of all, he must have a right relationship with God. You get what I'm saying? Here, that's why he says, with what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Right? He was more concerned about his relationship with God. It's very true. You know, especially in the midst of such people, sometimes you can be easily, put it this way, affected, right? And sometimes you can be easily infuriated as well because of what they have done, okay? Now, so in those situations, Micah had to maintain, an even stronger relationship with God than ever before, right? So he said, what shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before the high God? Right? Shall I come before Him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? You know, Does that really please God? Is that really pleasing to God? Does all this rams and river of oils really the be pleasing in the eyes of God? Okay? And so he has understood, okay, this very well, and that what men need to do is to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. Okay, so this is what he came up with in his mind, all right, and his heart. Now, sometimes I think this is also very important in our work for God. All right, now serving God is never easy, because serving God is about basically dealing with people, helping people to come before the Lord, to change their character or whatever. But we know that at times it is not something very easy to do. It's not easy at all. Alright? Now what can we do then? We need to foster an even stronger relationship with God. Okay? Now question ourselves, what should we do? When things are not going very well, are not going smoothly, then I think we should all the more look into ourselves. Inward searching is needed. Right? Well, human being is such that we are very quick to point fingers. It's this guy. See? He doesn't do well. He has not been behaving very well. Stuff like that. It's no point. Right? So, turning to God, I think, is more important. But also through his fostering of a stronger relationship with God, he is in a position to teach as well. That's why when we read verse 8, he says, "He has shown you, O man, what is good, and what does the Lord require of you, but to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." Now, so through his his relationship with God, he is able to present the ways of the Lord before the people. Right? Though many of them may not listen to him at all. Okay? So basically, this is chapter 6. Yeah? We'll go through all the chapters briefly, okay? What I know, I'll share with you. Okay, now we come to chapter 7. What is the name, again, what is the meaning of the name of Micah? What's the meaning of the name? Who is like Micah? Now can we read verse 8? Who is like Micah? Oh, you are not asleep, very good. Okay. Who is like God, like Yahweh? Okay, now verse 18, yeah? Here finally the meaning of the name is revealed, yeah? Okay. Who is a God like you, pardoning iniquity and passing over the transgression of the remnants of his heritage? Now, so, when it talks about the meaning of Micah's name, it points to which aspects of God's attribute? It points to the attributes of God's being a very forgiving God. A God who pardons the sin of man. Alright? And you see the heart of God, which is being reflected not only in the name of Micah, but is also being reflected in the characteristics of Micah when he carried out the work for God. You get what I'm saying? Yeah? Alright? Now, so, finally, it seems that everything is opened up, it's clear now. The intention, the real intention of God is very clear. God would like to pardon your sin. Okay? Who is a God like you? No one is like you. You know, look at the horrendous sin that the people have committed. And yet God was willing to bring them back. Huh? And so, pardoning iniquity and passing over the transgression of the remnants of his heritage is a question. Now, the second part of verse 18, he says, he does not retain his anger forever because he delights in mercy. Right? He delights in loving kindness. That is the very essence or the attributes of God, the intrinsic nature of God, right? Something within God. Now, So after this lesson, when we come back for the second, we will look at Micah, okay, from chapter 1 over, look at it again and see in what way Micah has shown these characteristics of God, okay, so that we can learn from him as well. So in our work for God, yeah, we can adopt some of the important principles that Micah has shown. Is that okay? Right, now we go through chapter 7 first. Here it says, "Woe is me." You know, who are the contemporaries at the time? Who are they? Who are the contemporaries? Isaiah, who? Amos. One more. The one who married to a harlot. Is it Hosea? Okay. Among these four, apart from Micah, who else says that woe is me? Hosea. Isaiah. Oh, very good, very good. Very good. Very good. How many times did he say that? Good. I'm joking. How many times did he say that? Woe is me. Three times. I don't know. Can you show me? Serious. I don't know, three times. I'm being honest. I know it's chapter 6. First one, once, yeah? Isaiah. And I think there's one more time. He said that. Of course, the context is slightly different. Yeah, one more time is in Isaiah 24, but I seriously don't know the third time. If you can tell me where, okay? Now, chapter 24. Can you do a homework for me? Find out why did Micah or Isaiah say, "Woe is me"? Chapter 24, verse 16. "From the end of the earth we have heard songs, glory to the righteous, but I said, I'm ruined, ruined, woe to me." Woe to me. Can you find out the reason why he said that? In chapter 6, in chapter 24, and where's the third time? Should, where's the third time? Okay. Can you tell me, yeah? Sorry? I seriously don't know. If you have got a concordance, please help me out. Check it. Okay. Alright. 6, I think. Chapter 6, is it? You know, it seems that this is quite a common expression amongst the prophet. Woe is me, woe is me, woe is me. It's in chapter 6, verse 5, yeah? Woe is me, for I'm undone. Okay, so you have Micah chapter 7 verse 1, Isaiah 6, 5 and 24 verse 16, okay? Can you do an assignment, please? Tonight, yeah? Find out why. Why do they say that woe is me? Okay, now, chapter 7, verse 2 to verse 6, yeah? Alright? Now, this is like a very brief summary of the situations of the people at the time, okay? Now, if you look at it, it's quite frightening Okay, it says the faithful man has perished from the earth, and there is no one upright among men. They all lie in wait for blood. Every man hunts his brother with a net. Now, obviously the faithful man has perished from the earth has to be explained. Okay, because like Micah, Amos, or Isaiah, they are good people. Not everyone is evil. Okay, not everyone. But what does it mean the faithful man has perished? Right? Now, one of the possible explanation is that because of the decline of what? Faithful works being seen in the society. Right? Now, if you read on, yeah, if you read on, okay, then you will begin to understand, right, the extent of the corruption, how bad it had become. Okay? Now, the second part of verse 2, they all lie in wait for blood. Every man hunt his brother with a net. Okay? We can see that kind of, put it this way, that kind of atmosphere at the time. Right? Everyone is ready to harm one another. Right? Now, and they want to make sure that they are very successful in doing evil with both hands. What is the term, man? There's a term, what do you call that? When you can use both of your hands to... Yes. Very good. Do you hear what he said? One more time, please.
Ambidexterity.
Meaning that you can use both hands to be very skillful in doing certain things. Okay? And this guy here, but they don't use both hands what? To be skillful in doing things good. But they use both hands to do evil. Alright? Now normally if you write, you only write with one hand, yeah? You write with your right hand, am I right? Can you write with your left hand? Yeah, you still can, but not very nice, huh? You get what I'm saying? You scribble, not very legible, yeah? Cannot be read. You get what I'm saying? Right? But these people here, you can see the extent of the wicked deeds they have done. They are very skillful with both hands. You get what I'm saying? Right? Meaning that they are capable of all sort of evil. All sort of evil with both hands. Okay. Now, here it says, the prince asks for gift, the judge seeks a bribe, and the great man utters his evil desire, so they scheme together. You see, all the top guys, top level guys, become what? They are no longer leaders. You know, their job is supposed to look after the commoners, the poor, to defend the fatherless, the homeless. You get what I'm saying? Now, it turns out to be, these people try to scheme against their own very people. Very, very sad. Right? It's a very short description, but it tells us a lot about the situation at the time. The whole nation has become corrupt. Okay, now, verse 4, eh? The best of them is like a briar. The most upright is sharper than a thorn hedge. Do you like a thorn? Or maybe if you want to give a rose to someone, you don't mind the thorn, yeah? Hear what I'm saying? It pierces you and you bleed. You get what I'm saying? And here it said, the best of them is like a briar. Nothing good can come out from them anymore. No more. Completely. Completely evil. Okay? Okay, we go on, yeah? Now, look at their relationship. Eh? Look at their relationship. Here it says, do not trust in a friend. What is a friend for? You can confide your problem or whatever you have in a friend. But here it says, don't trust in a friend anymore. You can imagine what kind of society it had turned out to be. What kind of society is that? You can't even speak to your friend, you know. Don't tell him anything. Why? Because after you have spoken to him, and then what happened? Your world will come back to haunt you. Right? And find fault with you, whatever. You get what I'm saying? You can see how severe it is at the time. Alright, now, here it says, do not put your confidence in a companion, meaning that you don't trust anyone now. Just trust yourself. Apart from yourself, don't trust anyone. Okay? Now, and then, what is even worse is this, guard the doors of your mouth from her who lies in your bosom. I suppose this must be a husband and wife relationship here. But you don't even trust someone who is so close to you. You get what I'm saying? So, basically it depicts a picture where from the very core of a family, or the core unit of a family is who? Husband and wife. A husband and a wife. If a husband and a wife cannot even trust one another, then you can imagine what kind of society it will be. You know what I'm saying? Utter corruption. Right? So when this Micah talked about this, he was given a very brief summary of the situation at the time. Now, so obviously it is not something surprising for us to see that the children dishonor parents. Why? Because of the broken relationship in practically every family. If a husband and a wife is not in good terms, right? Always quarrel, always fight, how do you expect the children to respect you? You won't. They'll fight. You can also every day the husband and wife fight, and the children pick up. Right? Obviously they learn not to respect the elderly. Okay, tell you a story, a simple story, you know. When my daughter is only about 3 or 4 years old, the young one, Katia, in London Church, I was having a discussion. So we were talking. You know, I don't know why I raised my voice a bit. I spoke a bit louder. And after that, she actually came to me, you know. She came to me and said, "Daddy, why are you shouting?" Then I realized that actually she's actually picking up everything that I do. Every bit of it. You see, a kid is very smart. So if in a family, if a father is not behaving himself, right, always quarrel with the wife, and the children will pick up all the habits easily. So they'll learn from us. So within a family, if you see the husband and wife don't get on with one another, then you see that the family is broken. Okay, you cannot have good children. No way. So the core of the family must be good, must be God-fearing. Then the children around will learn, will become an example to them. They learn from us. Right? Be gentle and be mixed. Be meek to your wife, to your husband. Okay? How many of you are married? Only a few. Raise your hand. No problem. Majority are not married. So you still can continue with your shouting. But I tell you, you shout too much, right? No one will want you. No, I'm joking. Be gentle and meek. Right. Now, here it talks about in-laws relationship, yeah? Daughter-in-law against the mother-in-law. Again, it's not something surprising. Okay? You see, because it's all boiled down to the fact that the community has left God and left the principle of God, and as a result we see that this corruption spring up a change reaction, okay, and it starts influencing from the immediate family members to the next and to those who come into the family, come into contact. So let's say the children have grown up, next time they got married, obviously they will behave the same way. Right? Because every family is practically the same. So it's not something surprising for us to see that the daughter-in-law is against the mother-in-law. They fight. Right? Now, verse 6, yeah? A man's enemies are the men of his own house, okay? So it's utter perversion here. Nothing you can do now. So again, you see that in that situation, Micah, how did Micah react to it? We don't want to talk about it now. We'll talk about it later. Right? So I find that this book is very unique in the sense that because Micah is always this to show us an example, how we can go about doing it. How we can cope with different situations. Sometimes we see that I don't know how to cope with a certain situation. Why? Because the situation probably is too unique to me. It's very new to me. I've never seen it myself. I've never experienced it myself before. How can I react to it or respond to it? I don't know. But we find that God is gracious enough. He made you from Micah to teach us how we can respond to each different situation. Alright? It says, same prayer.